Checkerfin. Checkerfin.
Boredom is always in my head.
Checkerfin. Checkerfin.
Yes.
It's the education gadfly.
Sex, sex.
Mike and Rick tell you
early college, high school,
pain and suffering, learning and teaching.
In your face, in your face,
your
face.
Listen to your words that they be preaching. Cause here's the education gadfly show. Yeah.
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my guest co-host from Education Sector, Kevin Carey.
Hi, Michael.
Welcome to the show, Kevin.
Thank you. Long-time listener, first-time talker.
All right. Well, it's great to have you here. You know, I have to say you are dressed much more formally than our regular host, Rick Hess, would be. You're wearing a suit and a tie and real shoes and everything. He'd probably be in here with, you know, a tank top and flip-flops and his gold chain.
Well, I thought Checker would throw me out if I wasn't dressed the right way, this being a conservative organization.
Yeah, so. Well, that actually is true, although somehow he lets Rick get away from it.
His own code.
He does have his own code. So Education Sector is, of course, a nonpartisan organization, though most observers would probably say, well, you know, it's probably left of center. So I'm a little curious. I mean, a lot of discussion about the Clinton-Obama campaign. People feel like it's pretty much over now over there.
Well, you know, it looks like since the nomination's based on delegates and the delegate math seems to be somewhat irrefutable. Yeah, yes. I think that's right.
Yeah. And I mean, can you give us any insight where there's some Clinton fans and some Obama fans within Ed Sector?
You know, the Ed Sector wasn't really split. We did not we didn't mirror the overall divide. We're more focused on their education platforms, which are not all that different. Although I did think Senator Clinton's higher education platform was more well-developed and liked parts of that. So I hope that Senator Obama adopts the things that were good in her platform there and elsewhere.
So does that mean that basically everybody at Ed Sector was in favor of Clinton?
No, not at all. No, okay. I think it was, it was a healthy debate.
All right. I'm just trying to get it. I got to assume that Andy Rotherham, one of the directors of Education Sector, I've been wondering, you know, based on his blog, is he an Obama person, a Clinton person? He was in the Clinton administration.
He was. I'm sure Andy's lack of specificity was on purpose.
Yes. Rats. We're not going to get anywhere. All right. Well, we have a lot to cover today on the show. Of course, going to play Pardon the Gadfly. We're going to hear some Education Outrage of the Week from Mr. Jeff Cooner. And we have a special Education News of the Weird correspondent joining us, telling us about yearbooks. So let's get started.
Topic one. A new report finds that there is actually no, quote, boys crisis, unquote, in education. Kevin, you are a boy. What do you think about the boys crisis?
Well, I think it's pretty clear that the report is accurate in the sense that boys are not doing worse than they used to do. There's been a steady but fairly mild increase in achievement among boys on whatever measure you want to look at. So this sense of crisis is really a function of the fact that girls are improving at a faster rate than boys and by some measures are actually doing better than they are. So if you think that's a crisis, then there's a problem. But if you look at boys on their own terms, then there's no crisis at all.
So Kevin, the report we're talking about was from the American Association of University Women, whose, by the way, offices are catty corner from ours here in Washington, D.C. Did they just look at achievement, just what, NAEP scores? Is that basically what they're examining?
Well, that was one of the big things because that's one of the best data sources you can look at. But they looked at other things, AP tests, SATs, I think some various state-level measures, graduation rates, college attainment was a big part of it. And, of course, women graduate from college at a higher rate than men do. But they have since, I think, the 1970s, so it's nothing new.
Right. But and this is the question. I mean, especially look at something like college attainment. I mean, we know in this economy that more and more, in order to get a decent-paying job, you need to get at least some college. We'll talk more about that later. And so if basically men, you know, at the college attainment are kind of flat or not making a lot of gains, I mean, don't you think that is a crisis? I mean, because it's many of the traditionally male jobs back in the past, the factory workers, you know, et cetera, those kinds of jobs that are going away, young men are going to need to get some college education in order to get decent paying jobs.
Well, there's a general college graduation rate crisis. And if you want to learn more about it, you can go to our Education Sector website. We just wrote a report about it. But I think the point was made in the AAUW report as well. All of these outcomes are much worse for lower income students, students of color. That's really where the crisis is, not so much between one gender and another.
I don't know. I still think you see a lot of men ending up in prison, much more so than women, right?
Probably, perhaps not because of educational disparities, though.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, perhaps.
Mike, the bottom line is keep Nico out of trouble, right?
Nico out of trouble.
It all boiled down to that. All right, next one. We talked last week.
By the way,
week.
I want to say, Christina, to clear things up. Uh-huh. I mean, I, I've been talking to a lot of people the last couple of days at some education events, the New School Summit, and I tell people the name. His name's Nico. Some people think that's maybe Japanese. I just want to clear that up, that is short for Niccolo, which is, of course, Italian.
Right, from Machiavelli, was it?
No, not based on Machiavelli.
Okay, next.
But we can have some fun with that. All right.
Next one. We talked last week about a piece in the Atlantic Monthly by an anonymous college professor that argues that lots of students in college shouldn't be there. Rick agreed. But what do you think, Mike?
All right. So we did have some discussion about this. But Kevin Carey has taken a very different position on his blog. And there's been some, you know, blog-on-blog violence people talk about. I don't know about we go that far. But here's the big debate is, you know, you've got people ending up in college who do not have, we believe, the prerequisite knowledge and skills to be there. Kevin seemed to imply in one blog post that, for example, an English lit professor that was having kids reading Shakespeare maybe would be better off having them read something else that they might be able to do better. Isn't that just sounding like lowering our standards for what college means? I mean, isn't it, Kevin, that if we just expect everybody to go to college, then college, the definition of college is going to go down? Just like expecting everybody to get to proficiency under No Child Left Behind puts downward pressure on proficiency?
Well, it's too bad Rick's not here so I could tell him why he's wrong about that. But I would say, first of all, nobody thinks everyone should go to college. And most students do, however, go to college because most students need a college degree in order to succeed in the economy that we have right now. Obviously, our K-12 system is doing a poor job of educating many college students. Unfortunately, what happens is that those most ill-prepared high school students tend to go to the colleges that have the fewest amount of resources, which is the same thing we see at the K-12 level. And so what I really took out of that Atlantic report was here you had an adjunct professor, low-paid professor, who had some very, very challenging students, adult learners, people with, you know, various kinds of needs, completely marginalized within the system. Nobody really cares how well he's doing, as he says, or his students are doing. My conclusion from that is not that these students shouldn't be in college, since I'm not sure where else they're going to go. My conclusion is that we need to do a better job of educating them, and we're clearly not doing that now.
All right, but you read that. Kobe fast on the trigger here. Come on. All right. Well, let me just get this in, is that if you read the Atlantic article, one thing that's clear is that a lot of these adults are in these courses because they are required to get some college credit for their job. So, for example, state troopers and, I mean, other people. And you say, boy, it just seems like there's this focus on building up somebody's credentials. And yet they have no business being in an English lit college course if they can't basically read and write, at a basic level. And so to me, it just says, you know what, I do think we're trying to push too many people into college. And the last thing we want to do is to water down college standards to mean something else.
Last one. Lots of honors classes are getting the axe as schools push more students into AP classes, according to a recent Washington Post report. Kevin, is this a good thing?
Well, I'm a big fan of the AP classes. I think it's an interesting thing that even as we have all of these very contentious debates about national standards and organizations like Fordham pushing them pretty hard, we already have national standards. The AP is a national standard. It's a national standard test. And it's one that people feel pretty good about because we put good teachers in the classrooms and people feel like the assessments are pretty good and colleges accept them. So, you know, all things considered, I think a push toward that kind of high-quality national standard is a good thing. And if that crowds out honors classes, which may have been of variable quality, then that's okay.
But Kevin, here's the problem. I mean, so there's been a big push lately to get more and more kids into advanced placement classes. And to some degree, this is a good thing because there are probably plenty of kids out there, particularly kids of color, who can succeed in these classes but weren't being encouraged to take them. But at the same time, there's probably also a lot of kids who are not prepared for advanced placement that are now being pushed in there to take those courses. And isn't that, yet again, we're going to talk about the same issue, going to drag down the standards, drag down what it means to be in an AP course? I mean, if you are a high-achieving student who is going to go take AP history no matter what, and now you've got kids in your class that really aren't prepared for that, and the teacher's got to deal with a mix of kids who aren't prepared, I mean, isn't that going to bring down the standards?
Well, you can't drag down the AP standard because it is what it is, right? You take the test and you pass it or you don't.
Well, you can drag down the quality of the course.
You could, although there's a lot of pretty compelling research that suggests that the most important thing to help students succeed in college, so they don't end up like those students in Professor X's class, is to expose them to college-level work in high school, whether or not, quite honestly, they even pass it. So, people have done studies that show that you're better off taking an AP class and failing it than not taking it all in terms of how you do once you get to college.
You're better off, okay? But if I'm sitting next to you in class, all right, and suddenly, you know, my AP class is full of, you know, half of the people there aren't really ready for AP, I'm not going to get as good of an AP class as I would have otherwise. And don't we care? I mean, don't we believe that, you know, kids that are really ready for AP have some right to get at the most challenging course they can?
I think the kids who are really ready for AP are going to be fine one way or the other.
Ah, see, see, Kevin, I think that's a typical, shall I say, you know, left of center perspective, which is we're not going to care about the high achieving kids because they're going to just be fine, even if they get bored to tears, even if they don't get challenged as much as they should be. But I'll let you know, we have a Fordham report coming out in this next month.
So all right. Beta, I look forward to it.
All right. Good. All right. Well, thank you. That was a fun round of Pardon the Gadfly. You know, what's fun about this is that Kevin and I actually have some fundamental disagreements. You know, whereas Rick and I, Rick and I disagree about a lot of things. For example, fashion. You know, we have strong disagreements about that.
That says good things about you.
Yeah. For example, I don't know, preferences. Like when we go to, you know, to the beach out in the Eastern Shore, we like to go to this quaint town called Lewis, you know, has a lot of culture and history and traditions. And he likes to go to Ocean City that, you know, it's kind of like vacationing at a strip mall. So there are differences, is what I just want to say. But perhaps not as many on education. All right. Enough said about that. Mr. Jeffrey Kuhner.
The education outrage of the week is really, again, it's Bill Ayers. It's the gift that just keeps on giving. This guy just won't go away. Not only is he now going to college campuses talking about what a wonderful, you know, guy he is and how wonderful it was that, you know, he placed bombs and he should have placed more bombs.
Oh, hold on.
As he told the New York Times.
Are you telling me he doesn't go to college campuses and tell
them? He went to a recent campus. I forget which one it is now. It's South Dakota, somewhere in the Plain States, where he had a kind of sort of informal get together with students. And it's like, you have to understand the time. There was a lot of racism. There was a lot of anger. There was the Vietnam War. And so, you know, I just had to put a couple of bombs in a couple of buildings, you know, and, you know, things went off. Some people died, some didn't, but I did what I had to do. And the thing about Ayers, Mike, that I find absolutely outrageous is, look, if he wants to place bombs and still be proud of what he did, that's his business. But when you, I think, make an eloquent blog, when you make a very coherent and cogent point that the American Educational Research Association should not have an unrepentant terrorist as their one of their leaders, what happens? You have guys like, I never heard of this guy before, and frankly, I don't even want to meet him, all right? But Mark Dean Millicott comes out.
Milo.
Well, whatever. And from Eddie Bizbuzz or whatever, I can't even pronounce the name of the guy's site, and he calls you a McCarthyite. Now, Mike, I mean, maybe I haven't learned my American history properly here, but was not Joseph McCarthy the senator who falsely accused people of being communists? How can you be compared to Joseph McCarthy? Have you called Bill Ayers a terrorist and he's not a terrorist? He's an avowed terrorist. He claims so in his memoir. He's given interviews saying, we placed bombs, we should have placed more. But suddenly now you're a McCarthyite. So look, my advice to people like Milo and others is just very simple. Go to Webster's Dictionary, look up the definition of terrorism. Bill Ayers was and remains an unrepentant terrorist. And frankly, the American Educational Research Association should do what they should have done a long time ago, which is not only get rid of him from the leadership team, they should kick him out of the organization altogether. That's my outrage of the week, Mike.
Jeff Kuhner with his education outrage of the week. I should point out, I believe this is the first ed outrage of the week that has not ended in somebody being called to be fired. In this case, Ayers was just being called to be kicked out of the organization. And Kuhner, I appreciate you, you know, backing me up there. I do appreciate that. If anybody should be called a McCarthyite in this office, it should clearly be Jeff Kuhner. let's face it, right? Were you a fan of McCarthy once upon a time?
Jury's still out.
Yeah. Kevin, you never weighed in, I don't think, yet.
Well, no,
controversy, did you?
I'll say this, Mike. I think you're right. I mean, I think unrepentant terrorists, which is a perfectly reasonable term to use, have no place in organizations that claim to have stature as AERA does.
Thank you.
I will say I find, as someone of the center left, I wish that those of the right would broaden their focus a little on higher education. Sometimes I think engagement with higher education amounts to little more than waiting for the next Bill Ayers or, you know, the crazy guy from, you know, University of Colorado, Ward Churchill, mm-hmm. to kind of come along and, you know, David Horowitz going around. And that stuff is peripheral to stuff like the Professor X story, you know, which, again, I think regardless of your opinion about whether it's a matter of preparation or resources, really exposed a huge and largely kind of unremarked mm-hmm. on crisis among basically the bottom 70% of students in American higher education who really aren't learning all that much.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair. Now, our mission is K-12 education, so we stick to that, except in, you know, instances where there's some bleed over.
So if there's a terrorist, then you can.
If there's a terrorist, we make an exception. No, you know, I mean, obviously, education research is there. They are researching K-12, and they are, you know, teaching teachers or training teachers who are teaching in K-12. So then, you know, that is still part of our beat, but we haven't gone into some of these other issues such as financial aid, but it's a fair point. Okay, so, but I appreciate that Kevin Carey agrees, Bill Ayers, the unrepentant terrorist, or bomber, as I told Dima Lowe, we'll call him just an unrepentant bomber, should not be leading the AERA. One last point on this, you know, guess who I saw yesterday at the New Schools Venture Fund Summit?
Who was that?
Bill Ayers' brother, John Ayers, who is a friend of mine and actually a really good guy who is involved in the charter school movement in Chicago. And we had a nice chat about this. He had, you know, he had some interesting things to say. I'll just leave it at that. Okay, it is that time that we wait for all week long. Education news of the weird time. With our special education news of the weird correspondent, Julia Hennigan. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Julia. Julia's been our intern here at the Fordham Institute since January?
No, mid-March.
Since mid-March. I thought it went by fast.
That's some high-quality management right there.
I can't spell her last name. Well, I mean, she's Julia. I mean, I've seen that, you know, on email, that's Jay good. Hennigan. You're right. I've never said her last name before. Yeah. So, but yes, since mid-March, I thought I was going to say Julia. It has flown by. But now that I understand, it's only been, you know,
2.5 months instead of five.
That makes more sense. But okay. Julia, student at Brown, has been an excellent intern here at Fordham. We're very sad to be losing her. And so here in her last week on the job, she got the big call to let us know about our education news of the weird. So tell us, what is it, Julia? What's weird this week?
So Mike, while I'm wrapping up my job here at Fordham, it's almost the end of the school year across the country, and a bunch of high school students in Texas actually got their yearbooks on Monday, and these students at McKinney High School opened the books to find that almost 40% of their pictures had been digitally altered by an employee of the photography company. Some of the alterations included switching the students' heads and bodies so that, you know, boys' heads were on girls' bodies and vice versa. Some of them had their clothing altered so they were different colors or had, you know, different slogans on them. And then one girl's clothing was actually appeared to have been digitally rubbed out so that it looked like she was actually not wearing any clothing. Officials at the photography company explained that they had altered some pictures to be consistent with the guidelines established by the school yearbook committee, although school officials contend there is no justification for the sorts of alterations that actually occurred. So happily for these students, the company is reprinting the yearbooks with the correct pictures for free. So, Kevin, I have a question. What's the best yearbook picture you've ever had taken?
Of myself personally?
Yeah.
Okay, now you can answer, Kevin.
Well, I've only ever had one, and that was in high school. Not a bad picture. Although, you know, you kind of got to wonder whether with Facebook and all these things, which mm-hmm. is essentially a permanent school yearbook that lasts for your entire life, whether this is just kind of the last vestige of print-based yearbooks.
I think that's right.
But there's actually been some articles, Kevin, that talk about the demise of yearbooks. And, you know, maybe this will only
continue. Wouldn't doubt it.
I think that's right. But wait a minute, Kevin. You've only had one yearbook picture taken?
Yes.
Were you homeschooled?
I guess that's true. I guess there must have been more than one. My senior year was the best one. That's right. I guess there were a couple others.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I mean, did you get them every year? Like kindergarten through 12?
No, they didn't really do that, I don't think. Or I just am not remembering.
Where'd you go to school?
Connecticut and then upstate New York. We can debate about that.
Interesting. Yeah, I still have my yearbooks going back to kindergarten.
Is that right?
Pull them out from time to time. Well, Kevin, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
And I hope that you'll consider coming back.
Absolutely. I would love to.
All right. Well, until next time.
I'm Kevin Carey.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, signing off.